Welcome to our committee.
I'm into my closet and grab my suit.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, thank you.
You want to move the bill? Now, where would you like this bill to go to? Omnibus bill, or?
I think so, Mr. Chairman. Inclusion in the omnibus jobs finance bill.
I will move House File 509 for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Would you proceed to tell us about this bill, you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, the bill that you have before you creates a new program for the purpose of retaining manufacturing jobs in Minnesota. And it also appropriates $2 million a year in the year 2006 and $2 million in 2007. Under this program, the Department of Employment and Economic Development would grant awards to employers to subsidize the wages and benefits of manufacturing employees. Now, there's one thing that all of us want to avoid in our lifestyle. Nobody wants to be unemployed. Nobody. Because if you don't have a job, you're not a somebody. And I think this particular piece of legislation will help in that situation and keeping it a viable situation in the state of Minnesota of having employers continue to hire employees. Eligible employers show that they can retain jobs with money from this particular piece of legislation. The money would be a grant, but would be under the supervision of DEET, Department of Education and Economic Development. And there are certain criteria that the employer would have to meet prior to being awarded the monies that this particular piece of legislation provides. The metropolitan area is not included in this bill. It's for greater Minnesota. We've had a large number of businesses that have left and have left the state, left some of our communities, and I think it's prudent and good policy to basically understand that the state can help businesses to remain in our state and continue employment of our workers. I think that's prudence in action. That's in essence the bill. I think if you have read the bill, and hopefully you have, it's very easy to understand what this particular piece of legislation is trying to accomplish. I have with me individual from the Minnesota AFL-CIO that would like to present a small and a brief bit of information. His name is Brad Leto. Brad?
Mr. Leto, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and we do support House File 509. I know in particular in Representative Dempsey's district, there are a couple of plants with union employees, hundreds of workers that would be eligible for this, that this would conceivably assist Red Wing Shoes and Federal Mogul. And the Red Wing Shoes, I believe, and certainly Representative Dempsey would know better than I, but I believe have been around 100 years, pay very good wages in the area in Red Wing, and also in Lake City, Federal Mogul pays very good wages as well. Look at this as a possibility that could help those facilities as well as many others in the state. Obviously, we'd like to have this statewide, but understanding with the budget constraints and everything else that it's the metro area is not included, but we do support the legislation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
First of all, let me see if there's anybody in the audience that wants to testify against this bill. Seeing none. Any questions from the membership? Representative Clark.
Well, I'm trying to read this. I do have a problem with the fact that it's only grave instead of it. Beyond that, I'm trying to understand what this does. This provides 4 years of paying half a wage to a company who could pay as little as $4.60 or something, or maybe it's less than that, $4.30. To subsidize wages and benefits, okay, so
that's correct.
It could be that it would pay the health care for a company, and they could pay as little, I guess it's a family of four, 110%. What is that, Representative Dempsey?
Well, the grant awards allows a maximum of $10,400 for a grant for one job, and it provides a subsidy for what's already being paid, and one job cannot exceed $4 an hour. Okay, it's the maximum subsidy that would take place, and in the wage subsidy, it would be $1 an hour benefit subsidy. So it benefits not only wages, but also fringe benefit. I don't know if I answered your question.
Well, Mr. Chair, then, if the company was going to use it for benefits, they would have to they could only use a dollar for the health care out of this per job. Is this $10,400 per year or for the 4 years period, or what is that over what period of time?
For 1 year.
For 1 year, we give them a $10,000 subsidy, and they could pay.
Well, that's the maximum. That's the maximum that it would be. So it could be anything from one to 10,000.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
I guess that raises another question. Like, who's determining? What is the competitive standards for these? Does this? It reminds me. Only a little of what we were trying to do with Mead many years ago, because that required had a number of things about helping it match the employer. It didn't. Mm-hmm. It didn't allow them to pay below. They had to pay the same that they paid every other employee at the company, and it was only for 6 months, and they had to retain them after that. This appears to be. I mean, I don't know what the standards are. How do we know, for example, that company A versus company B would get the grant? And do they have to have any? Do we have any standards by which we say, that's too low a wage? You just can't expect the state to make up your wage without you putting in a decent amount. I don't see that, and maybe I'm missing something.
Okay, well, just let me. I'll mention some things to you, and that is that. The appropriation is for a two-year period of time, okay? And the other thing is that there are audits and examinations and inspections that are going to take place. It authorizes the commissioner to audit, examine, that's the commissioner of Department of Economic Development, and it authorizes the commissioner to audit, examine, and inspect the books, records, and facilities of employers receiving grants to ensure proper use of the grants, and it requires grant recipients to consent to audits, examinations, and inspections as a condition for receiving a grant. So there's going to be supervision in regard to company that applies for and is granted money under this particular piece of legislation.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
I think you answered the question of are they going to be audited and is it going to be a good paper trail. That's fine, but my question is prior to that, when a company is competing to get this subsidy for their job, uh-huh. for their worker, they can pay, if I'm reading this correctly, they can pay a sub-minimum wage, and they can do that for 4 years, and then have a state subsidy help them bring them up to 110% of poverty. Am I right?
Representative Dempsey.
I think the point is that the criteria that is created in awarding the grants, there are three major ones: the likelihood that the jobs will be retained because of the subsidy, and these are not minimum wage jobs. These are jobs that have already been paid to people that are beyond the minimum wage, and so on. The effect of job retention on the community and surrounding areas. So that's how this particular piece of legislation will impact the community and the area that it provides employment. And then the availability of jobs at similar wage and benefit levels in other areas beside itself. So I think what we've got is to be offered the grant, there's criteria that you must meet. After the criteria is met and the program is put into work, then what takes place is that there will be reviews, so to speak, such as are they keeping the proper records and so on. And so I think that there is supervision in the bill, and I think there's accountability in the bill. And I think that's vitally important, and this, I think, is vitally important because of the fact that it'll retain jobs in the areas that it applies to.
Mr. Mayor,
Representative Clark, I got a question.
Final
too,
question.
So go ahead.
Just along this line. What guarantee is there that these jobs will be retained? I don't see a clawback provision, something that's usually there when you give a subsidy to a company. I mean, what it says is they pay it if they don't follow what, you know, proper. And I'll let you answer the question. I'm sorry.
Right. Okay. There is a repayment of grant procedure also in the bill that sees that if that's not being done, there is consequences in regard to that. So I think we not only have a criteria before giving the money, we also have a supervision in regard to it, and then a repayment of the grant.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Dempsey, I have a question. Now, this bill is to subsidize good paying jobs, as Mr. Leto said, from Red Wing Shoes, from prevent them from going to China or Mexico and have their shoes made. Is that correct?
No, it is not. They would qualify, however...
Well, I'm giving a hypothetical.
Oh, okay. It would apply to any it does not apply to the metropolitan area. It's outer...
I understand that. I got that part down.
Now, and let's say
it applies to Red Wing Shoe Company.
Okay.
So, to prevent them from going to China to have their shoes made for...
Mexico?
A third or whatever it costs. We're going to subsidize the wages down to what they were in China or Mexico. Is that what you're trying to do?
No. I think what we're trying to do is to preserve the wages that are already being paid, so that layoffs do not have to take effect. And so what we're trying to do with the legislation is to see to it that jobs that are already online and people are making a living from that job.
Absolutely.
Is maintained. So now, just to give you an example, let's say it's a particular company. I know of some companies that are, a company, for example, can go to Mexico And rather than paying $16 or $17 per hour, it'll cost $3.85.
So we're going to subsidize the $3.85, the difference? Is that what you want to do? You want to subsidize from $3.85 to what they're presently being paid? Is that what you want to subsidize with the state's money?
That is correct.
Okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Mr. Chair, if I might just respond to a couple of issues. Yeah. The 110% of poverty true might have to be looked at. I think if you look at, first of all, you would not be able to pay less than minimum wage in the area anyway, and hopefully that will be going up soon, but well, that's another debate. It has to have effect on what the wages in the area are is one of the criteria. Now, if the wages are only minimum wage, obviously it's going to be at least minimum wage because they can't pay less than that. No employer can. The other issue about the repayment, if there was a job retention portion in there, that would be good, although obviously if they don't fill the job that they say they're going to fill, they have to repay the grant. The former MEAD program, and this is a variation of that, obviously we support it as well. The issue of subsidizing $3.85 wages or $5.15 is the current minimum wage is an up. Obviously, if it meets all those criteria and the commissioner finds that it meets those, it gives the commissioner authority, but obviously I would think the commissioner probably is going to be looking at other jobs. The other thing on Red Wing Shoe is I think part of the reason that, and I understand that would only be eligible and it may not happen, but is part of it is retooling, making the plant more competitive so that when those subsidies come off, they can still compete with facilities in other nations.
Mr. Leonard, do you think $2 million is enough? If we're going to subsidize everybody that's outsourcing their business to keep the jobs here, I think if I was a competing business with Red Wing Shoes, hypothetically, then I would all of a sudden tell everybody in the world I'm outsourcing my business because I want the money too. Because we're giving an unfair advantage to one company. But there again, this is J.R. Dempsey's bill, so.
Certainly, Mr. Chair, if you need other criteria in the proposal to tighten it up, we're not opposed to that.
We'll work on that, I'm sure. Anybody else have any questions on House File 509?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Clark.
I do want to say that if this bill were to go forward, I really would want to work on the criteria. I think, you know, I think there is a time and place for what you're talking about trying to do. I just find the criteria very loose, and I would be concerned. Can I just ask this question? What is the current wage that a person at Red Wing is making? Is it more than 110% poverty, less than
100%? Pardon me?
What is the current wage at Red Wing or any other business you care to talk about that would be benefited by this? If you talk about the Red Wing one, which I understand, I like those shoes. I've always looked for shoes made in this country, and there's very few. But my question is, what are they paying now, and what does this do to that wage?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clark, there is not a single wage. It depends upon the job that they're doing, but I would say that the jobs maybe are around somewhere from 14 to 18 to 19 dollars per hour. Man. And those are good paying wages, and we don't want to lose those in the state of Minnesota. I think there are other a number of companies that have left this state. I just read in the St. Paul paper yesterday where Ford Motor Company is now laying off people, but they're not working for the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, whatever the case may be. And that's a serious concern. And so in answer to your question, I don't know what the average pay of Red Wing Shoe is, but I think the wages in greater Minnesota, the wage is very, very competitive.
Mr. Just final point. One of the ways to tighten this up, too, is to make sure that it comes under the under deeds subsidy accountability law. And so that would just be one thing I would want to say, that if we, you know, if we're going to go forward with this, we should make sure that it does, because otherwise,
I'm sure
that low wage jobs, nine something an hour, is not something that you can live on there. And I don't know that we want to be subsidizing low wage jobs. I think if we could help keep those jobs, you know, usually these criteria for a wage subsidy starts where the jobs are now, and you try to help keep them there. You don't lower them, and unfortunately, this is a lower level than maybe most of those jobs are. So I would really want to tighten that up and change that. And that's just my comment.
I agree. It should follow that criteria. However, that's why they're sending it over to Mexico or China. But with that, I renew my motion to have House File 509 be possibly included in our omnibus bill. All in favor? No, we don't have to do that. Thank you very much, Mr. Representative Dempsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
We'll certainly look into what they do pay, and appreciate it. House File 1002, Representative Gazelka, is he here? Don't see him here. Is Hamilton here? Seifert. Marty's here. There you go. Representative Seifert, welcome to my committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Can I move that?
Mr. Chairman, members, I guess the bill would just have to be moved for consideration.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File 698.
Okay, Representative Gazelka moves House File.
Garofalo,
excuse me. Too many G's. Councilor Garofalo Gazelka moves House File 698 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. Representative Seifert.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
First, let me ask, is anybody in the audience against this bill? Saying none. Let's have the short version.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. This morning, I'm just going to bring a consolidated bill together with all the various historic sites that were closed in the last cycle. As you can see, there's bipartisan authorship from those of us on both sides of the aisle who were affected by this. It includes those facilities that had to close because of reductions. Some have remained open by putting some fundraising efforts forward and putting the bailing wire and tape together to try to keep things going, but some of these ventures have been more successful than others. Some of these sites are larger than others, and as I would make an argument with other bills, these are Minnesota historic sites, not sites for Redwood County or Clay County or the city of Moorhead or the city of whatever to have to raise the money locally. These are Minnesota historic sites. We oftentimes don't ask for the city of St. Paul to come in and have a pancake feed so the state capitol can stay open or Fort Ridgely can stay open or whatever. And so we're just asking for the same consideration that all the other sites around the state that have, regardless of number, policymakers in the past have made the decision that these sites are going to be around. And we did have the bill worded that this is a one-time appropriation, so if the committee does have one-time money that's available, it's not added to your base and your tails for future, and that way you try to keep your tails clipped and see if there's some money available on a one-time basis. So, Mr. Chairman, I'll leave it at that. I know a lot of you have had presentations on one at a time, but this kind of brings everything together.
Thank you. Mr. Keyes, welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bill Keyes. I'm the head of Historic Sites and Museums for the Minnesota Historical Society. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to be very brief. I know that you have heard about this issue before, and just wanted to remind you that the reason why we're here is that there were budget cuts over the last few years. Those budget cuts resulted in seven historic sites out of the state network having their funding significantly reduced. Over the last several years, those sites have stayed open, all but one, have stayed open through local fundraising. There's been a tremendous amount of local effort on this and a great deal of support. Unfortunately, those community fundraisers are finding it exceedingly difficult year after year to go back to the same resources. The first year, they were able to raise substantial money. The second year, they were able to raise about a third of that, and that's true pretty much across the state with the various sites. This funding would support salaries of paid staff at the sites, and so they could stay open.
And Mr. Keyes, is this $1,201,000, is that the total cost of keeping those sites open?
That's correct.
Okay, how much admin from the Historical Society main office is in this?
In that figure?
Mm-hmm.
There are, in the central office administering the historic sites network, there are, including myself, there are three other full-time employees that are paid through this fund.
So what percentage of the total amount would that, those salaries amount to? David, do you have something to add? Mr. Keyes?
I'd have to do some calculation to give you a percentage. It's relatively modest proportion of that.
Well, just give me a figure. I can make the percentage. I'm a grocer. I know percentages very well.
To tell you the truth, I don't have that figure separated out here, but I could get that number to you.
I would appreciate it.
I'd be happy to.
Any other testimony on House File 698? We have some people who want to testify for it. Thank you very much, Mr. Keyes. Please give your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Nancy Benz. I'm president of Friends of the Kelly Farm, and I'm an at-home mom, and I've volunteered at Kelly Farm for 6 years. Also here today is Steve Rolfe, who is the building environmental administrator for the city of Elk River and has taken his children to the farm for many years.
Is he the fundraiser?
Yeah, he's the big fundraiser. Let's see. I'm going to skip to the chase because we don't want to take up more time than we already have. The Kelly Farm is a state historic site and a national historic landmark that each year helps educate over 11,000 students from over 100 schools in 72 house districts. The Friends of the Kelly Farm have kept the Kelly Farm open the last 2 years through vigorous fundraising, special events, and increased public relations. We have solicited donations from corporations, foundations, our neighbors, our families. But the effort becomes harder for us and all the historic sites covered in this bill as the communities see an emergency situation turn into a long haul. We believe that the Friends group should be working to build our site's community and regional presence and enhance their educational programs, not just desperately and perhaps unsuccessfully fundraising to keep them open with reduced programs. The Kelly Farm and the other sites in this bill deserve to be funded by all of the state of Minnesota. And I turn to Steve.
Welcome to our committee. Thank you,
Ms. Fenn. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Stephen Rolfe, and like Chairman Gunter said, I am the fundraiser that's my primary function with the Friends of the Kelly Farm. And we're here on behalf of the Kelly Farm, but all the historic sites in this bill are important. Friends of the Kelly Farm support this bill because it doesn't pit site against site or sites against MHS. All the sites included in this bill are important to our children's education. They're like a barometer of the quality of life in our state. They're too important to their education to lose. They're too important to preserving the story of our past to lose. They're too important to our quality of life in this state to lose. As Chairman Gunther said, I am the fundraiser for the Friends of the Kelly Farm, and that's getting harder and harder to do. I don't think that can be sustained. So it is time for the state, if they want to keep these sites open for our kids, it's time to step forward. I want to thank you all for hearing us so many times, and I just want to emphasize again how important this really is. And it's kind of do or die time right now. So, thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else would like to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. If I could.
Very well.
I got a clarification on your question earlier about the $1.2 million on the expenditures and whether this fiscal note included funding for central office. It does not. It does not.
It does not get any money. No money out of this money.
Out of this money. I misunderstood earlier, sir.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to know. Thank you. So there's no admin spent on these historic sites?
Of this $1.2 million.
Okay. There is admin, but not out of this money.
Correct.
Okay. Very well. That's kind of where I want to know. Thank you very much for that information. Representative Gravelo renews his motion to have House File 698 be possibly included in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Appreciate your...
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ellison, welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1897 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Very well. Please explain your bill, Representative Ellison.
Well, first of all, Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing us to come today. I'd like to call Mr. Lewis King down here to be with me, and Mr. Sherman Patterson, and Councilmember Natalie Johnson Lee. And there are several other members of the community who are here to assist me with the bill, and I'm going to ask them all to share some thoughts with you on this bill and ask them to keep their comments very brief. And
we have 10 bills. I'd like to know, does anybody in the audience like to testify against this bill? Seeing none, let's have the very short version, please.
The very short version. And, Mr. Chair, I also have an oral office amendment with the court's indulgence.
This court.
Court is going to chair.
It comes to
the rest of habit.
Go ahead. What is your oral amendment?
The oral amendment would be on line 6. After the word year, it should read 2005. And on line 7, year after the word year should be 2006.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that oral amendment.
Very well, all in favor of that motion, signify by what? Anybody want to know why we're doing this? Seeing none? All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Mr. Chair. Against the motion, say aye. Pass. Go for it. Your amendment is there. The bill's the way you want it.
Mr. Chair, I've been House File 1897 forward today to try to address an appalling condition that exists in the mid-north side of Minneapolis. The condition that I'm referring to is almost a flurry of violent activity that has resulted in 10 out of the last 13 murders in our city in the last year. Everybody heard about the murder at the Penn Steakhouse, and I'm sure that if you read the papers, you read about it. Very brazen activity. Some gunman walked into the steakhouse midday, shot one man who had been out of prison for about 2 weeks as he was eating a steak dinner, and another individual who was about 60-some years old who worked there as a cook ended up getting shot and killed as well. But that's just two of the murders. There have been several others as well. We're looking forward to a worrisome situation this summer. We're very concerned about the level of violence that we may well be facing. And we're certain that the economic conditions, together with the violence, make a combustible mix. I don't want to go on and on about some of the social problems that we're facing, because we have a large number of very wonderful folks who live in our neighborhood who deserve a whole lot better than they're getting. But the fact is that we have 50% African-American child poverty in my district. We have 15% adult unemployment. And as you know, unemployment just means that you're not receiving unemployment benefits anymore. There's a good deal more people who don't have jobs who'd like to be working. And so this bill is designed to address that condition. We believe that if we shore up some of the economics and give people opportunity, folks will be occupied, they'll have a little income, and they'll be productive, and we then can couple that with our anti-violence efforts in order to make sure that we have a good, safe summer. So what we're asking for is your support. And so at this time, what I want to do is turn it over to Lewis King, who is the executive director and chair of the Summit Opportunities Unlimited. And
2 minutes, buddy. Or one. Welcome to the committee. Give your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm Lewis J. King, the second president and CEO of Summit Academy OIC, located in North Minneapolis.
Welcome again.
Thank you, sir. Sir, I came to Minneapolis in 1989 as an Army officer and began working in North Minneapolis. I was surprised to find the unemployment there and the status of the folks in the community. I began putting kids to work, painting houses, building those large Adirondack chairs that you see around town, and eventually we also began construction enterprises. Over the years, though, the funding for the summer programs dwindled from $1.4 million to literally a third of that. And so we haven't had a chance to put kids to work anymore. I've had to turn and focus my efforts on training adults. We believe that the best social service program in the world is a job, and any investment that you make to help these young people earn revenue this summer rather than becoming recruits for illegal activity will be well invested in the community. They will learn good, strong work habits. They will have a chance to make a contribution, and they'll build resumes and build relationships with employers who in the future may look to hire them again. Support for this bill is not only support for North Minneapolis, it's a support for our entire state. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Sherman Patterson works for Jordan Area Community Council, which is in really the eye of the storm of this flurry of violence we've been seeing, and he'd like to share a few thoughts with the committee.
Welcome to our committee. Give your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Sherman Patterson, Jordan Area Community Council, also a resident of North Minneapolis and U.S. Army retired. I'd like to share a few quick words from Mr. Chair and Representatives. On April 9th, 05, my wife called to inform me that a teenager was shot on the corner, one block from our home. There were about 10 to 15 individuals on the corner. She heard 10 shots ring in the calm night air. Then the screams. One young man was hit in the neck, a 15-year-old, by a shooter. It's a strong possibility that this young man may be paralyzed. I served this great country for 21 years in the U.S. Army to defend and protect it from our enemies. Since I have retired and come back to live in it, it seems as though we are our own worst enemies. How can we continue to allow the cancer to eat away at our community? The tragic thing about cancer is that it will metastasize throughout the body to every part it can reach. I see no walls in North Minneapolis, so who's next? Where will it go? I also ask myself, how far will it spread if it isn't stopped? Remember, we were too comfortable when 9/11 happened. I think we should take heed to the issues we are having with our kids and young teenagers. Stop it now before we become too reactive. The choices we make today will play a significant role in everyone's future, and the future is now. We cannot continue to be myopic to the situation. I ask that you support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patterson. Our final testifier will be Councilmember Natalie Johnson Lee.
Ms. Johnson, you were in the Army too, were you?
No, but I dated many of them. No, Jesus. Hello, Chair and committee members. I'm Councilwoman Natalie Johnson Lee. And, you know, I'd also want to speak to some other individuals that were, they're also here in the audience to testify, but I understand you wanted short, quick, and to the point. But Mike Christensen with the City of Minneapolis, Chip Wells with the City of Minneapolis, Ewell Jones with the African American Chamber of Commerce, Councilmember Don Samuels, also in the audience. I'm going to be real brief because I understand that I pretty think that you get the message for the most part. But what a summer job does, or what these jobs will do for young kids, is they would teach them responsibility. They would give them a sense of accomplishment. They would teach them pride. The one thing that's always exciting, I used to run the Economic Development Division in the Minneapolis Urban League, and part of that was the summer jobs and youth employment. And the excitement that the young people would come in and be able to say, I'm working for the summer, or the repetitiveness, where they would always come back and say, can I get a summer job? What do I need to do? I kept my grades up. And you said, if I kept my grades up, I could get another job. It gives them experience. It also gives them confidence. It also gives them a hope for the fact that they have a future, because when they work, other people talk to them, they get experiences. As well as it helps strengthen the local economy, because these young people then spend their money right in the economy with the businesses and local businesses in the neighborhood, which then strengthens those businesses. So that's why this particular bill is important among the other things that you've heard today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, so thank you very much for entertaining our presentation. We'd like to thank those other folks who came in support and hope they're not upset that they didn't get to testify. I think they're mostly focused on the fact that we had to make a good, strong, short presentation.
And that's your presentation, that shortness.
Thank you. And we also want to acknowledge that we have somebody here from juvenile probation, Mr. Chair and members, who would, if he was able to testify, be, tell you that jobs are crucial to the anti-violence effort because kids don't start out shooting. They start out disappointed, losing hope, falling prey to people who are negative and want to use them for bad things. So thank you all very much, and we urge your support.
Thank you. With that, Representative Sertich removes his motion to have House File 1897 be possibly included in an omnibus bill. Thank you very much. Representative Liebling. And then we got Representative Sobert coming next.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'd like to move House File 1578 for possible inclusion in our jobs omnibus bill.
Very well. Representative Liebling, please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Actually, I would like to ask that that motion be amended a little bit because we need to move this bill to the general register.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend my motion. That's what I meant. For the general register.
Thank you, Representative Sertich. Mr. Chair and members, I also have an author's amendment that I believe has been distributed to you. It's the A1 amendment. And would Representative Sertich also accommodate me by moving that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A1 amendment even before I see it.
Very well. Would you present your amendment, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the amendment would probably be a little bit clearer if I just kind of explain the whole bill, because the amendment just further clarifies what the bill is trying to do.
Before you do that, let's do a little housekeeping thing about this fiscal note. There has been an agreement between the author and myself and the department that we would put a line in our omnibus bill that would take care of the fiscal note of this bill. And we have Mr. Campbell here. I think, are you going to clarify that for us, or?
Mr. Chair, my name is Waylon Campbell. What you said is correct.
Okay, and basically that's what we're kind of doing, to try to get rid of this fiscal note so she can go to the floor with it. It does have a fiscal note, and I would not want to send a bill with a fiscal note to the floor. So the agreement was with the department and myself that we would put amendment in our omnibus bill for this. Representative Slawick.
Mr. Chair, are you doing that so we can get the bill moving because it's causing a delay with
that's
payment?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Trying to accommodate the author.
Okay.
Okay.
Any other comments about that? Okay. Thank you very much. You got anything else you want to say about the bill?
No, I don't,
very well.
Chair, other than the department's neutral on the bill, but we support the amendment.
Very well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sertich.
I can't wait till I get to be like you, so you can just bring people down to say it. That's what I agree with. He's doing the right thing. Where do you find those kind of people to testify? I got to find one.
Haven't you noticed he's a great American? Representative Liebling, you want to describe your bill with the amendment? We haven't passed amendment yet. But we will soon, I think.
I will do that. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Well, this is a very simple bill, but it's quite an important bill. Basically, what it deals with is the Department of Human Services has been collecting spousal maintenance payments for about 15 years, and in August of 2004 made a decision to stop doing that, believing that they didn't have authority under the statute. So what this bill does is simply clarify their authority to collect those payments. What this is simply income withholding from paychecks. What they're not doing is any kind of enforcement activity. And what the amendment does is it clarifies that these cases that are getting these spousal maintenance only withholding services will not be getting any kind of enforcement services. So that's what the amendment does. The other important thing that the amendment does is put in an effective date, which was missing from the original bill. The service that the department is offering now is scheduled to end in June of 2005, and that's why it's very important that we kind of hurry this bill through, because the department and I and others are very anxious that these services not be interrupted. And just to describe a little bit about who's affected, some of you may have received calls from your constituents. This affects about 1,700 cases around the state of Minnesota, mostly women, but not exclusively women. These are people who, in a divorce agreement, have been awarded spousal maintenance. And this is very uncommon these days, really. There are many thousands of divorce cases, as you know, and only really a few get these spousal maintenance payments ordered in the first place, and only a small subsection of those get this withholding. It has to be requested and ordered by the judge. Most of the people getting these services are elderly or disabled. Many of them are victims of domestic violence. And what this system does is it simply allows them to collect these payments that are due from the former spouse without their having to go through an elaborate legal process that would be very expensive to go and collect these themselves month after month. Since I have sponsored this bill, I've received calls from all over the state. A lot of these people are very, very concerned if these maintenance payments stop, if the collection stops. Many of them will be destitute. They'll be forced onto public programs and so on. So that's what the concern is, that we move this bill forward as quickly as we can. So all this bill is really doing is clarifying that the department has the authority to collect these payments and offer this service in cases where there is no child support being collected. That's the difference. The department also does collect payments where child support is being collected as well, and that's in a different category. This is people who have no child support payment, either there was none ordered initially, or the child support payment has been completed, the obligation was completed. So with that, members, I would entertain any questions. It was not my plan to have any other testifiers unless there are questions.
Mr. Campbell, does this amendment create a bigger fiscal note than we had before?
Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't.
Okay, very well. Thank you. We have the amendment that Representative Sertich moved. Let's move on the amendment. All in favor? Any questions about the amendment first? Representative Wilkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Liebling, does this, there's been some controversy in the 4D area in the past, and it has to do with providing services for people of means that have the means to basically go out and hire an attorney themselves and get an enforcement action in the courts. Does this affect those type of people, or is this strictly for people who are otherwise on public assistance?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wilkin. There is no means test here. However, these, as it turns out, these are almost all, I believe, people who are of limited means. As I explained, it's becoming less and less common these days to have any kind of spousal maintenance at all. And so, but to directly answer your question, no, there is no means test to this. I did want to also mention, members, that this bill has received bipartisan support in both houses. Representative Jeff Johnson is a co-author on the bill. And it's been through civil law, and it did not receive any dissent in civil law. So if you want to know specifically the income levels of the people, I don't know if we have that information, but it is compared to the number of people statewide who get spousal support at all. The number getting collection services is very, very small.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Liebling, do we know if there's anyone that has means of their own that are sufficient that we're going to end up supporting through this program?
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wilkin, I don't know that specifically, but what I can tell you is that the cost to the state is really negligible, and there is a fee paid by the obligor, so that there is really a net gain. We calculated that it's about $300,000 a year that goes to counties for doing these collection services. It doesn't go to the state, so the fiscal note that's with this is just a little bit of money for reprogramming computers. It's just one-time money to make sure that these cases are not also getting enforcement services. So there's really not a state subsidy in the sense that the state is not putting out dollars to do this for people once the system is in place. That the fiscal note just to clarify the system so that they're not providing services for people that they shouldn't be. And
Representative Liebling, there's a little discussion going on here. They're telling me what I can and can't do again. I hate it when that happens. They were saying that the fiscal analyst is saying that this bill should probably go to Ways and Means with this fiscal note in it before it goes to the floor. Or we can mull it over for possible inclusion. So I'll let you take that choice. Everyone's Soderberg. Not representative. I don't want to. Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman and members, I was out of the room, and so I'm not really familiar with what the discussion was. But as I understand it now, the department is saying they can eat the cost of this particular initiative?
Mr. Campbell.
If that's the case, then this could go to the floor.
Mr. Chair and members, the department has a rule that we can eat things if they're $10,000 or less. This is more than that, so I can't really testify that we can eat it officially, but I think we could...
We'll take care of it.
We'll take care of it. There is the fee. There is a possibility of working something out with how we disperse the fee to the county that we might be able to recover our costs that way. But I don't think we will have a problem.
Mr. Soderberg.
Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, that when we ask for a revised fiscal note with the amendment, which would be the 1E amendment, and we're going to get back a fiscal note of zero, then it could go to the floor. But if it's going to have any fiscal impact, we would have to either stay with this committee, be rolled into the bill, or ask for the Ways and Means. But if they're going to give that assurance...
So, Mr. Campbell, when you work on that, you get a... So that fiscal note does it that way, we don't have to ask it when she presents it to the floor to have it re-referred to Ways and Means.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Very well. You got a frown on your face.
Mr. Chair, this is a very important bill, and we hear this in civil law, and I think that I'm just very interested in making sure it passes one way or another, and I'm a little bit concerned about it traveling independently. Sometimes you do both, don't you? Have the bill travel independently as well as be rolled in, Mr. Chair?
Not normally. I have never done it before. That doesn't mean it can be done, but I think if Mr. Campbell assures us that the department is going to eat the fiscal note and he will send us a revised fiscal note on the amendment of zero, then we will be fine. It can go to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Sollett.
I hope that works just fine. And that's we've had some debate about this in the other committees, and I as long as it doesn't get lost in the shuffle, and we keep an eye on it.
If it doesn't do that, we simply, I stand up and say, because it has a fiscal note, that we will send it to Ways and Means Committee. And that's as simple as it gets. It doesn't mean the bill is dead or anything. Okay. It means that it goes to a money committee that can make a decision what to do.
Thank
so, any other discussion on the bill? Representative Nelson.
Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding then that for this type of service, there's a fee, like the child support collection, if you ask for it, that there's a fee charged to it. So even if people have means, they're actually paying a fee for the service. So that even if it's a person that has means, and I know I've gotten those emails too, don't subsidize the wealthy, but they're paying a fee for this service. Am I correct, Matt?
Mr. Campbell.
Representative Nelson and Mr. Chair, there is a fee paid. It's paid by the obligor, and the fee is $15 a month.
So then they're paying a fee for the service, so even if someone of means, they're paying for the service that they're getting. Thank you.
Thank you, staff, for keeping me on the straight and narrow. With that, Representative Sertich renews his motion to have House File 1578, as amended, be passed to the floor. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Representative Solberg, welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chair.
Over to your
left. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 668 before us for possible inclusion into the jobs omnibus bill.
Very well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Silbert.
Mr. Chair, first of all, thank you, and I do need to have an amendment. This was a bill that was passed a couple years ago and then vetoed by Governor Ventura. So if you would be so kind as to indulge me if I give you an oral amendment that, to fix it up. On line 8, if you would eliminate that line. And on line 9, you cross out design, construct, and the comma. And insert in line 8, Children's Discovery Museum. And then on line 9 as well, cross out a new and put in the. And I think it works. And then it would read economic program to the children's. I guess I need the word 2 in there on line 8, right? So,
to the.
Children's Discovery Museum, I guess I need the word 4 in there also, for furnishing and equipping the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids. If council can correct my oral amendment, I would appreciate that if someone would offer that.
Ms. Long, do you have that amendment? Very well. You want to read it to us?
The bill would now read, $300,000 is appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development for a grant to the Children's Discovery Museum for furnishing and equipping of the Children's Discovery Museum in Grand Rapids.
Very well.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move that oral amendment.
Representative Sergis moves that oral amendment. All in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to present this bill. As I indicated before, this is the second time around on this one. We have a children's museum in Grand Rapids, and this would help enhance the operation or the equipping of this particular museum. I have with me John Kelch, who is the director of it, and Doug Miner, who has been very active in this from day one, and they'd like to give some presentations on the children's.
Let me find out if there's anybody in the audience that would like to testify against this amendment. Seeing none, I would appreciate a very short.
We will do that, and we're passing out some information as well to you.
Very well. Welcome to our committee. Please give your name for the record.
John Kelch, director of the Children's Museum. I want to thank the committee for hearing us today. This is a project with statewide significance. We serve 10 counties. We're not just the Grand Rapids Children's Museum. Southern Minnesota, as you know, has a wonderful children's museum here in St. Paul. We feel Northern Minnesota needs one too. We've proven that it works. We serve Aiken, Beltrami, Cass, Carlton, Clearwater, Coal Wing, Hubbard, Itasca, and Coochiching, and St. Louis County. We've served 129 different schools in that geographic area from 61 different communities. So we bus them in from Brainerd, Duluth, International Falls, about 120-mile radius. We serve 6,000 to 8,000 kids every school year. We're jam-packed this month and next. Every day there'll be buses running in. So we hope you'll consider this. It's the last piece of our capital. We've raised $1.4 million for the building. That includes the land that was donated. So it's the very last piece. You might ask, how do we operate? We have sustaining help from Brandon Foundation for 7 years now. Doug, do you have anything? Doug is our president.
So your name for the record,
Doug Miner,
and I'm president of the Children's Discovery Museum Board.
Okay.
And we just hope that you will consider helping us with this final piece for the Children's Museum. And it is a great asset to all of the children across northern Minnesota.
Very well.
And Mr. Chairman, just one additional thing. They've been very instrumental in also being able to bring in traveling displays as well. So it's more than just their permanent displays, but they brought in some displays from the Smithsonian Institute as well. So it's a great facility, and we appreciate any consideration.
I make a point of getting there. Any questions about House File 668 as amended? Seeing none, thank you for your presentation. We'll roll in for possible inclusion on the omnibus bill.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Change this. Gazelka, welcome to our committee. I will move House File 1002 for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And I'd like to ask right off the get-go, is there anybody like to testify against this bill? Seeing none. Representative Gazelka, please continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Glad to see you all here on Monday morning. When Explore Minnesota came here about a month ago, they gave this brochure, and I can't say that I have a brochure for everyone, but just to remind you that one of the things they mentioned in this brochure that is for every dollar that they use, they get a return in taxes back to the state of $4.60. And so one of the things I decided to do with some of the other tours and members is to propose that we provide more revenue from the state for spending and advertising and getting people to come to Minnesota and spend dollars as a result of our tourism activity. 14.5 million dollars is what I'm proposing. I will tell you that the state of South Dakota spends that, the state of Wisconsin spends that and is proposing more, and if we want to compete with those states around us for these dollars, that I recommend that we propose this or spend the same dollars amount. So with that, I'll leave that as the brief explanation, and if you've got questions, I'll take those.
Representative Raffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Gazelka, I see there's a matching grant component to this. Could you briefly elaborate on that for us?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Raffel, the way we want to work this, and the governor's proposing this for $1 million of the funds, is that private industry has to raise that, and the state would match that. So what I'm proposing is doing that at $6 million, and so the money would not be spent unless the private industry could come up with their own $6 million to spend on this. But the way it would work, too, I might add that it doesn't help just big tourism. It also helps the small mom-and-pop resorts out there as well, so that they work together to bring the business in. But that's basically how it works, and then Explore Minnesota would spend that money.
Very well. Would anybody like to testify for this bill? Seeing nobody jumping up. Representative Fowler.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zalka, I had a constituent come see me about this bill. He's with the Roseville Tourism Group and so forth. What is the base budget right now? So you're doing $6 million each year. What is it right now? How much of an increase is that?
It's $6 million increase per year. The budget I'm proposing is $14.5 million, of which $6 million of that is the matching part, the matching fund. So basically, if we had matching, we'd also have another $6 million from the private industry that would be going into this fund for joint advertising.
I see we have a member or a guest here. I didn't know if you were. I was looking around for you, but I couldn't see the audio. So I'll carry the load here. But
so you're saying that we have $8,500,000 presently, and we're adding $6 million a year.
Yes.
And we're adding that in a unique way. Mr. Bunce, would you like to explain that for us?
Yes, Mr. Chair and representatives. Thank you. My name is Rob Bunce, and I'm the founder and co-owner of Bluefin Bay on Lake Superior, and I'm also on the board of the Minnesota Hotel Association, and I'll be very brief. The Minnesota Hotel Association, the Minnesota Resort Association, and the Minnesota Restaurant Association have each voted in favor and passed resolutions in support of House File 1002. So the industry is behind this increase in funding for Explore Minnesota Tourism.
So if let me try to see if I got this figured out. Let's say that Rob Bunce puts $1 million in there, and he gets a tax credit for $1 million coming back?
No, not on this bill.
Not on this bill. This is a different bill. Sure. I was wondering where we got this. This is just straight out funding.
This is straight out funding from the general fund, and certainly the theory being that this is really a revenue creating bill rather than a spending bill.
Absolutely. If we had revenue to create from. Representative Sertich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I sit on Explore Minnesota Tourism Council with the testifier, with Hospitality Minnesota that's sitting way up in the back there, and some other folks that brought the entire community together. Representative Zelka, I just want to commend you. This is a very important bill because in the governor's budget proposal, there's actually a real cut of $1 million to tourism in there. It's kind of masked in this new public-private partnership. Because he adds into his the governor's budget the $1 million that will be raised by the private sector in this. Private sector, though, sees the need to compete with the Wisconsins and Missouris of the world who are investing much more in tourism than we are at this time and increasing their investment even in tight budget situations because of the return on investment. So this goes beyond that $1 million cut that the governor has in, and the private sector has to step forward, and they've offer to step forward and even match it more so that we can get more money into tourism.
Representative Zelka, do you talk to the administration about this? What chances do we have of them putting money in our budget for this?
I have not spoken to the administration directly about this. This is in part a response to some of the cuts that they are proposing.
They're cutting $1 million, you're adding $6 million.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're adding $13 million.
That's correct. What I'd like to do, Mr. Chair, is have Mr. Bunce talk about how quickly we could expect to get returns back into the state.
4.6 times 1 year.
Well, even quicker than that. I think as they typically would advertise in the spring for the summer, you know, you could expect business to go in the summer and get a return almost immediately.
Mr. Bunce.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Zelka, thank you. That's accurate. In our business, we, for example, advertise in the spring for summer business. We advertise in the summer for fall business and the fall for winter business. So really the return on investment is quite fast, and that's been borne out by surveys that Explore Minnesota Tourism has done with people that have actually gone to the website, called in for information, they received the information, and they asked them specifically, you know, did you come to Minnesota or vacation in Minnesota as a result of these promotions, and if you did, where did you go, how long did you stay, how much did you spend? And so it's really quite well documented that return on investment is accurate, and it comes fairly quickly. So yes, the money spent in say 2006 is most likely returned by $4.60 in 2006.
Very well. Representative Slaw.
Mr. Chair, not to hold things up, but just a brief question because I'm not new to this committee and so forth. If we gave you $3 million and you raised $1 million, then what happens with the extra $2 million? Is that match withheld? Maybe I'm asking you this, Mr. Chair. How those matches work? Are they matched dollar for dollar as the money comes in?
Actually, the match comes in actual revenue because of business activity in the Department of Revenue every year, and it's pretty well documented. I remember not too long ago when Tourism Director Markison said there was an 8-to-1 match. I think this one is more understandable, so I believe it's an actual match. This is considered by many. Representative Sertich. since he's on that committee. Let him tell.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Falk, it will be a dollar-for-dollar match. The tourism industry would have to put up the money to get the money, so if they only raised $1 million, they would only get $1 million match on that. And actually, the interesting part about the 8-to-1 or the 460-to-1, it all depends on if you're looking at federal taxes, state taxes, local taxes, and the tourism industry has been good at breaking that out to see what the direct return is to the state of Minnesota and to the feds as well. So that's why that number has shifted throughout the years.
Anybody else have any questions about this bill? Anybody else want to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none. I will renew my motion. Have House File 1002 be possibly included in the omnibus bill. Thank you very much. And in all fair and disclosure, Mr. Bunce's wife is my wife's first cousin. So I've got to be nice to her. Representative Tinglestad, welcome to our committee again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 2212.
Okay. I think the version we have of your bill is not the engrossed version, so we have to pass an amendment.
No, it's
already been passed. Okay.
We're just ahead of the paper.
We're ahead of the paper. Good. Better than me and behind. Representative Ruth, you want to move House File 2212? Where would you like this to go?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for possible inclusion.
For possible inclusion of omnibus bill? Would you please describe the bill for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is to set up the Sesquicentennial Commission. I hope I'm saying that right. The 150th birthday anniversary of statehood here in Minnesota. And this passed out of GovOps with the A2 amendment last week on deadline day, so I think possibly the revisor's office just a little behind on engrossments, although in your House Research Bill summary, it does show it as Subdivision 5 under Section 1. With this bill, it sets up the membership of the commission and some of the duties of it to get ready for the 150th birthday. And I'm just recently appointed to the 100-year group for the state capitol, which is this year. Lots of activities going on. And we're realizing that it takes a couple years to really get things going for a major celebration. And working with information from other states who've recently had their 150th anniversary, we'd like to get started with this soon. So with that, I have Mr. McCormick here from the Minnesota Historical Society to give more information on House File 2212.
Welcome to our committee, Mr. McCormick.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Patrick McCormick. I'm Deputy Director of the Historical Society. The Historical Society brought this bill to actually as a report to the governor's office, and the governor's office gave us some support and told us that we should seek legislation, which is the best way to go forward with establishing this kind of commission. Our goal is to try to bring all different parts of the state of Minnesota together to celebrate the 150th birthday of the state, and the commission is just a good way to get started with the heavy lifting and the work that's involved here.
Representative, do we have it? Is in the amendment, where do we have the amount of money we're spending on this? We got a blank appropriation. Any idea how much that is?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer that question. The actual fiscal note is due on Wednesday of this week, but we're drafting it. We're putting together a fiscal note that follows some of the report recommendations that we sent to the governor, and what secretarial position in the first year, which would be about $100,000 total, and in the second year we would add an outreach or marketing position, and that would be about another $150,000. The intention is that this commission would come to the legislature with a variety of funding proposals, and that private funds would be hopefully the bulk of the funds expended on the Sesquicentennial.
Mr. McCormick, you mentioned you've talked to the governor. Is he supportive of this fiscal note? Does he have any clue what you're talking about in terms of dollars?
Mr. Chairman, we talked to the governor's staff, and I don't think that they've made any commitment to state appropriation for this. So it's a difficult issue. You're going to have to work through whether there are one-time funds available or not, or whether it's a good idea to wait a year on funding. At this point, it's not a good idea to wait on establishing the commission.
I totally agree with that. I remember having discussions with a friend of mine that's involved with Wisconsin's, and he said they started a year earlier than we did, and they were a year late. So I think this commission will have a big job ahead of them, and we should probably get with it pretty soon. Any Representative Slawick?
Mr. Chair, and your Representative Tinglesetter to the testifier, I had a question about page 2, line 17. So 17 through 20, so part of the commission's role is to come up with a plan for capital grants, and I just don't see how that differs from our typical bonding process or why we would have a special plan. Are they going to do sesquicentennial bonding projects? Or, I mean, wouldn't this be normal projects that are done, or why is there a special language for that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slawick, the intention is that it would be to pull together information that would be for bonding projects. So that's just one of the duties of the commission, and that would be kind of a separate line item that would come later.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Slawick.
Isn't it, Representative Tinglesetter, isn't that done anyway for in the state on what bonding projects?
Mr. Chair, Representative Slawick, to some extent, but this would be specific to the sesquicentennial. And I know that the Historical Society has put together a little booklet of some of the information they're looking at for the 150th year, and you know, some of that is outreach with different groups seeking private donations as well. And so a piece of that is just some of the things that might be necessary to do the various activities. And actually, when they had the 100th anniversary here in 1958, there were 1,600 centennial events across the state. I don't know if we'll go to quite that extent this year, but you know, it is a year-long celebration, so there's various things involved of a capital nature.
Thank you.
Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative said, I don't know if there is a another document somewhere where you talk about who might be involved, like, for example, on the advisory council, but I am just thinking if this bill goes forward, I would like to see that maybe spelled out a little bit more so that we're ensuring that we have representation of the diversity of Minnesota. So at the advisory council, you know, I presume you're going to try to find some people who also have expertise in general, but that we're really, well, that's my point, just that we have a diverse group. So maybe between now and wherever it goes next, does this have to go anywhere else besides the...
It'll go in our omnibus bill, so we'll have to discuss that later.
Maybe if we would be willing, if we could have a little conversation about maybe spelling out the advisory council a little bit, that would... I appreciate that.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any other questions about House File 2212 as amended? It was amended. Seeing that, we'll lay this over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, appreciate it.
I appreciate the membership going through these bills so quickly. Representative Hamilton is here. Can we get the Sertich show? I agree. Okay. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, fellow committee members.
I will move House File 1521 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, I do have two individuals here to testify on behalf of this bill. I'd like to give a brief overview, and then I'll turn it over to Mr. Schultz, who is with the Board of Electricity. The summary of this bill basically extends the period under which a person can obtain an alarm and communications power limited technician's license. Initially, when we first put this bill together and introduced it, we did have some opposition. There were some concerns with the Board of Electricity and also with the Minnesota's Electrical Association. Since then, we have worked together. I believe we've addressed those issues. I did accept a friendly amendment and to be able to move this bill forward. So with that, Mr. Chairman, with your permission, I'd like to call on Mr. Schultz with the Board of Electricity.
Welcome again, Mr. Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is John Schultz. I'm Executive Secretary of the Board of Electricity. I'm here to testify in support of this bill. As Representative Hamilton indicated, there were some concerns initially regarding the this particular bill. The amendment that was created does address those concerns. Just to give you just a very brief overview, this bill actually addresses a problem that has developed actually subsequent to the change in the law in 2002. The board in that particular law created power limit technician licensing. There were a couple of windows actually of opportunity. As we found over the intervening years through additional enforcement, there were a number of people that missed the opportunity initially, didn't recognize the opportunity, didn't recognize the need. This simply allows those people an opportunity to come into compliance. The board believes it's a good policy to provide these people an opportunity that's very similar to the one that they missed. But rather than having the board to spend its resources on enforcement, it brings allows these people opportunities so they can become licensed and conduct their work in a lawful manner. I don't have any other comments unless the committee has any particular questions.
How many people did avail themselves of this training?
In the 2002-2003 time frame, the board administered approximately 15,000 examinations. We examined as many as six times a week, as many as four times each day, and we actually took the examinations all the way across the state. And my favorite comment is that we actually administered on two occasions more examinations in North Dakota than North Dakota does in a year.
Mr. Schultz, there's a fiscal note here. What is it? 30,000? No. What is the fiscal note?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman?
Representative Hamilton.
Yeah, with the fiscal note, the way that basically, it's going to be $125,000 for cost, but it's also going to bring in $125,000 worth of revenue.
Nice.
The first, pardon me?
I was thinking, I was hoping he wasn't giving these exams for nothing.
So, there will be a little cost initially the first year to get this off the ground.
Correct. Very well. Would it be more appropriate to send this to Ways and Means than it would be to roll it over in our omnibus bill? Anybody have any opinion to that?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes?
We believe that it actually was sent to the floor on the Senate side.
Sent to the floor?
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, the House would require this to go to Ways and Means because it does have a fiscal cost, so.
Plus your committee, Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Sir.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This bill, much like a bill from an author that you're going to hear from shortly, is revenue neutral. So unless Representative Knobloch wants to spend a lot of time on small bills, which he may, I mean, that's his prerogative. I mean, I wish we could just send these to the floor. Hopefully Representative Knobloch will look on these bills in a timely fashion to get them moved out of his way, because I know he has some more important bills financially coming through his committee.
So.
Yeah.
It does have a very small fiscal note. Is Representative Knobloch taking everything? Got him?
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you're asking me the question, but the rules of the House.
Has he been taking everything? How's that?
Mr. Chairman, my experience has been that he would, unless he tells us he doesn't want to see this bill, he'd want to see it, and
So let's move it to Ways and Means. You might want to ask him. Maybe he'll re-refer it to the floor.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I do have one other testifier here. Brief testimony. Mr. Shane Kent, if that's all right.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name again, Shane Kent. I work with Southwest Wireless Net. It's a rural wireless fixed high-speed internet provider. We provide broadband internet to Southwest Minnesota that our customers do not have. Many of them do not have any other alternative for high-speed internet. We feel we're providing a great service to this. In order to comply with the Board of Electricity and the laws, that we need to have this license for our installers, so we can go out and offer that as a service, so we can go out and professionally install this, not leave it up to the homeowners. We've been running into a lot of complications with homeowners trying to follow the instructions so we can get them the service that they need. I have sat on the prep course for this PLT examination, and many of the co-attendees of this prep course were from North Dakota. I took the course in Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, they, under the current law, they just need 3 years of experience. They do not need to have it lawfully obtained, because North Dakota does not have a PLT requirement. It kind of puts some Minnesotans at a disadvantage, which is kind of where we're coming from on this. So, again, thank you for your time, and if you have any other further questions.
Well, any other discussion on House File 1521? I would like to change my motion to have House File 1521 be sent to Ways and Means Committee. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you, Mr. Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Representative Sertich, which bill you want first? Pardon me?
898.
I will move House File 898
to the Ways and Means Committee.
To the Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you very much. For many of you, you've seen this bill as it's traveled through almost every committee in the House, it seems like. This is the House Safekeeping Bill for the Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council. Chair Gunther and I sit on this advisory council over the summer. We like to spend a day a week together, even during the interim. Oh. And the council is basically made up of a few legislators, Department of Employment and Economic Development, the business community, labor community, and advocates for those on both sides. This bill basically does a few short things. It deals with the Suited Dumping Prevention Act of 2004, which is a federal act prescribed by the Bush administration and passed unanimously in both bodies of the federal government. It deals with SUTA, which is the State Unemployment Tax Act. It deals with experience rating businesses. The unemployment insurance is paid out based, and your rating is based on how much unemployment has been paid out from your individual business. There are certain businesses out there, though, that play a shell game with their experience rating by shifting employees to another company title, and that lowers their rating. The problem with this is businesses playing by the rules then are going to pick up that cost. So this is really good for employers and employees. That's the first part of the bill. There's some housekeeping language in the middle of that, and then at the end it deals a bit with appealing unemployment hearings, the appellate process, which we've worked out with the legal community, the legal committees, and have support on all sides. Mr. Chair, though, I do have one small amendment. As we were going through the committee process amending this bill, we needed to clean up some more language, and this is basically housekeeping language, the A05-0374 amendment, and I'd like to move that.
Very well. Would you like to explain the amendment?
The amendment just cleans up the language further. When we amended the bill in, I want to say, the Commerce Committee, it had some unintended consequences of changing some language. We had to clean that up.
Okay. Anybody have any questions on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Sertich moves the A05 amendment for inclusion in his 898 bill. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Nelson's here to say everything I said was correct, hopefully, and if no other questions, I think we're done.
I think it's time to publicly acknowledge that Mr. Nelson is missing his sidekick and is now in charge of the Unemployment Division. Congratulations.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm only here. I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Unemployment Insurance Legal Affairs. Mr. Chairman, while you may have heard some things, that in fact is my wife who is in charge of the unemployment insurance program now.
She's in charge of you too, isn't she?
Now 24 hours a day.
There you go. I can identify with that.
And Mr. Chair, this is being televised too, so she could be watching right now even.
I hope Lou is taping.
I'm in trouble no matter what.
Mr. Chair and Committee, if you look at fiscal amounts, this actually is somewhat revenue neutral. It comes from the special fund, the Unemployment Insurance Fund. There is a savings, though, potentially tens of millions of dollars. And if you look at fiscal note, it's a diminishing return because we're hoping to catch the bad apples at the beginning, and it's kind of a guesstimate. You can never really put your finger on how many people are trying to skirt the law, so this is our best guess on that, and but it should be saving money in the long run.
Certainly a fairness thing for other employers.
Mm-hmm.
With that, I renew my motion to have House File 898 be passed and sent to Ways and Means Committee as amended. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sertich.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 792, and I'm assuming we're going to be moving that to Ways and Means as well. Oh, do we?
You want?
No?
Where did you want to send it?
I want to send it anywhere. Anywhere Mr. Soderberg wants it to be sent.
Well,
I'm learning. One second, Mr. Chair.
Yes, see? Yeah. That's pretty neutral.
That's the last one.
That's wrong. Looks pretty neutral to me. Everything it contemplates.
Mr. Chair, we're going to be doing some surgery for this bill. You're going to be keeping part of it. We're going to be sending the rest of it on its way. Mr. Chair, I'd actually like to move that House File 792 be recommended to pass and put to the general register.
Very well.
And then, Mr. Chair, I would like to, and I don't know exactly how we do this, you can hold the language. I would like this committee to keep the language from page 5. Page 5, lines 6 through 9 in this committee, laid over through this committee, for possible inclusion in your bill.
Representative Soderberg. No, that's...
You keep giving them a pay decrease, Mr. Chair.
I think I've been here too long.
I think I'm...
actually, what I would recommend is...
Not nearly long enough.
That language on lines 6 through 9 is in the governor's bill already. It's the recommendation where they're allowed to expend the cost of the contractor's fund out of the special revenue fund as opposed to now we're paying for that out of the general fund. That's already in the governor's bill. So what I would suggest that you may want to do is just amend the bill to remove the stricken language on page 5, beginning on line 6 through line 9. And we already have that language in the governor's bill, so we don't need to. By inclusion, it's already there.
Sure. Okay, then, Mr. Chair, I'd like to delete the new language on page 5, lines 6 through 9.
Representative Clark.
Could you remind me, Mr. Soderberg, how much is that worth?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Clark, this is $100,000 a year that is currently being paid for with general fund monies, expenses of this account, and this would allow them to
expense the account. The account would pay for the expenses of administering the account rather than the general fund. $100,000. It's part of the governor's recommendations. Representative Clark.
I got to think about this, Mr. Chair. I mean, I accept your explanation. I'm just trying to understand something.
Perhaps I could explain my bill and then we can take care of my motion at the end. And Mr. Chair, it's a very, very brief explanation. This is the Department of Commerce housekeeping bill. What it does is it adds a few exemptions to business licenses. Right now, we exempt business licenses from everything from plumbers to podiatrists. This would add residential mortgage originators and athletic agents to the exemptions for business licenses. And then the other part of this has to deal with the fund that we're talking about here. And what the contractors recovery fund. What is happening is when we have court cases, and Mr. Vassar's here to correct me if I get this wrong. I'm going to try to get it right though. When we have court cases, the legal fees have to be paid for the Department of Commerce from somewhere. Originally it was paid for from the general fund. This would just say that they can recover those legal fees from the contractors recovery fund, the fund that it's dealing with. And if you see the fiscal note, it's they would just replace general fund dollars from the special fund. And that is the gist of my bill in a nutshell.
Ms. Long, you got that down? Yeah, but what are we going to put in our omnibus bill?
Okay. Any other questions on this bill? As amended?
Mr. Chair, we didn't vote on it. I wanted to wait.
We got
to
vote on the amendment.
I'm fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Clark, fine with it. All in favor of the... excuse me.
I was just going to suggest, Mr. Chair, that since we're deleting all of the new language that's in Section 2, with the exception of a little Clause 1 indicator there, which has no purpose, if we're deleting all of the new language, that perhaps we should just delete Section 2 of the bill.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend my motion, and as long as Ms. Long knows what she's saying, then that works for me.
Very well. Everybody understand the amendment? We're going to delete Section 2.
Yep.
Where does Section 2 start?
Section 2 begins on page 4 at line 8. We don't have page 4.
Then we're going to delete...
And oh, that's why. There's no page 4. That's why.
We're missing page 4. That's the problem.
But
Mr. Chair and members, I know this is true, and I was hoping we wouldn't get that in depth in the bill. The bill is copied with only odd-numbered pages. Fortunately, though, it is a very odd bill. Fortunately, though, Mr. Chair,
with me.
All of the changes, all of the underlying changes happened on odd-numbered pages, so what we're deleting are pages that are existing statutes. All of that we're deleting is existing statute from the even-numbered pages for members' knowledge. So what this bill would do if under this proposed amendment, we wouldn't deal with the contractor's recovery fund. We'd be dealing with that in Joe Gunther's omnibus bill, and we'd only be dealing with the exemptions to the residential mortgage originators and the athletic agents.
Hey, well, I have a lot of confidence in this mom's ability to take care of us. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hold the same sign. Now to the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to amend my motion then. Again, I would like to...
we've been doing that a lot lately.
I know. Someone's feeling decisive, I would just say we're working to get it right. I would move that House File 792 be recommended to pass and move to the General Register. And dare I say, actually, consent calendar.
I wouldn't oppose that. I see no objections to that. I always thought it was a kiss of death to do that, but if you want to try it.
Mr. Chair, the way this bill's been going, it'd be kind of fun to see what other trouble we can get into.
Well, if the author wants to go to the consent calendar, I'm all in favor of that motion. Representative Sertich moves that we have House File.
Actually, that's a quick question.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I just
you know, I read this last night and I saw the thing about sports agents, and I just have to ask, you know, what is the current process for sports agents in terms of licensing or...
Still a bastard.
What are they doing now that we ain't going to make them, or they're not going to be doing when we pass this?
Mr. Chair, Representative, what this language really does is it amends the definition of a business license, and it excludes from that definition two additional categories, and mortgage originators and servicers and sports agents, or I think that's the correct term,
athletic
agent. Why this bill is necessary, and why, if you read the preceding exemptions, there's just a litany of exemptions from this definition. There is a provision in Chapter 15 that says any business license must be issued within 60 days of submission of an application. And the occasions arise from time to time, not very frequently, but where a license cannot be issued because of criminal background investigation or whatever within the 60-day limits of the statute. And we've been confronted with this on a couple of cases where the applicant's attorney has come in and said, my client is deemed licensed because you haven't issued or formally denied the license within 60 days. So this would apply those same standards to these individuals. You'll see if you look at the existing statute, those exemption from that 60-day deemer applies to everything from plumbers to abstractors and insurance agents, etc.
Thank you. I guess those sports agents, I just wanted to make sure, you know, they're kind of a slippery bunch. So
we, to the best of my knowledge, we only have one registered athletic agent in the state right now. So.
Okay, with any other questions on House File 792 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Sertich renews his motion to have House File 792 be passed and sent to the floor in the consent calendar. All in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you very much, members. We got through a pretty big agenda in 2 hours. Appreciate your help. We're adjourned.